CliffCentral.com. Good morning, everybody. It is Thursday. It's the 9th of January. I wonder how many people are actually January-ing. I mean, no one. I think even really disciplined people, I think January is just like, from a financial point of view, it's just a nightmare. I'm feeling good about January everywhere except financially. But, you know, it's like a good time of year. You get things done and line up your stuff for the year. You know, we've been talking about that this week. I'm not going to go over old territory. This morning, Pumi Mashiho's here.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Good morning, and 2020.
Sia Sangweni. What does that mean?
Hey, Badna.
I'm just slightly exasperated.
Already, and it's...
only the 9th.
Okay, let's just get this out of the way now.
Okay, go on.
I love how when I try to be superior in life, there's just life's way of humbling me and just showing me like, you aren't school for cool. Yesterday, I jumped on Gord's bandwagon when he was talking about people who are caring so much about Star Wars. It's like, ugh, get a real problem in life. Why are you so stressed about something so far-fetched? Was I not the one yesterday afternoon sitting at home, rocking back and forth, wringing my fingers when Prince Harry and Duchess Meghan sent their resignation from the royals?
Is this what's affected you?
You and Piers Morgan both.
Yeah, only people in the world. Well,
I know I should get a real problem, but this has affected me now.
You feel like you know them, so I...
Not even for that. I'm like, who resigns from paradise?
Yeah.
All you have to do is wake up,
well, Adam
shake
and Eve
a few hands.
Famous for having resigned from paradise, and they were the first humans.
Yeah.
And Mbulelo, who's laughing his backside off. Hey, how you?
I'm very good. That's Adam and Eve.
It's a good example.
Anyway, so let's jump to that, because the official statement, which, I mean, Sia was in an apoplexy yesterday. So let me read it to you as it came out. This is very exciting for people who watch and care about the royals. For the rest of us.
So I didn't even see the statement. I didn't know what was going on. I'm going about my business. Bloody Piers Morgan.
Oh, he told you.
Had a meltdown.
Why?
He's just having a meltdown. You know, he's always had a thing about Meghan Markle, right?
Yeah, he doesn't like her.
He absolutely hates her. Now, she's like walking away and he's upset. I'm like, what does this guy want? You didn't want her to begin with. Now that she's saying, okay, cool, I'm done with you, he's upset.
But let's get into some of this stuff, because I think this has to do with what a lot of people and a lot of families go through. All right, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex have decided they will step back from their roles as senior royals, become financially independent, and split their time between the UK and North America. How does anyone have a problem with that? They want to be, they don't want to be dependent on the British taxpayer or on the Queen. Good. I say that's great. If I had kids or grandkids and they said to me, we want to become financially independent, they would inherit everything. Those ones. The ones who were dependent would inherit nothing. I love this. And you know, they are different. They're royals of the present. They're modern people. They're not like their parents or grandparents or people before them. Harry married this girl who's got this fierce independent streak, which I think is cool. She's different to everybody else. She's been struggling with the British press, who are a pack of absolute animals. I wouldn't want to deal with them every day. And she's probably said to him, listen, Harry, you want this marriage thing to work? I've got a couple of things that I need, and you've probably got a few things you need. Let's sit down and talk and chart the course. Let's plan a future for ourselves that we don't have to follow other people's rules. I think that's beautiful. Like, there's a couple who's in charge of their future. How is it a problem, Sia?
I don't know.
For
like
you and
it.
Piers Morgan.
Well, Piers's point was, and I'm paraphrasing his tweet here, but he says, like, Meghan, and just doesn't even refer to her as a duchess. Like, Meghan ditched her father, ditched her sister, and just continues with the streak of ditching people by ditching the royals. It's like, okay then, Piers Morgan. And he finishes off the tweet by saying, I rest my case. I just don't like the fantasy ending. It's like,
the royal family's much too big.
It just doesn't matter.
You know
matter.
How many people are in it? Like, Harry's, he's, what, fifth in line to the throne now?
Yeah,
well,
but, you know.
Listen here. The Queen, did you see the picture they put out over Christmas, I think.
It was the Queen, Prince Charles, Prince William, and then...
And George.
Yeah.
That's the line of succession. Mm. So that's how it's going
to
go.
Those are the heirs to the throne.
He's not even in the picture.
No, and they didn't spend Christmas with the Queen.
No, they were in Canada.
So... Leave him alone.
But it's just still the fantasy of it. Next thing they'll be like, and I'll respect whatever decision they make, even though it's just not fun. They'll say, nah, it's actually not important for us to have royal titles. Like, what?
They will. They'll drop those two. You know what? Family's family, though. They'll come back and they'll spend time with them. He's always going to be the Queen's grandson. And
the future king's, like,
yeah,
either brother or uncle.
Right.
Wait, hold on. She's also a successful star of many seasons of one of the biggest hit television shows. So they're not like going into being destitute. People are saying they're giving up the dream. She's probably got like $100 million. Relax, people.
They're still going to
get some nice money.
They're gonna earn their own money, they say.
His mom
they
was...
Say. He'll still be getting his, like, stipend.
Yeah, the royal stipend somewhere. They've only just alluded to their new plans by saying that they'll be launching a new charitable entity, whatever that will be, but... Nah.
His mom was called the People's Princess. She's going to be selling books till his great-grandkids are dead. He'll be fine, people. Relax. Yeah.
And I don't think this is something to get upset
it's
about,
ridiculous.
Sia. I think it's great. Sia. Celebrate it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Sia.
I want to see Duchess Meghan in the royal jewels. I want her with like a fleet of cars.
She was never going to get any of that stuff.
But she can dabble in, like, the jewels and stuff.
No, she got to borrow the tiara for the wedding, and now it's done. Sorry. It's like that poor cousin you sometimes invite round, and they get to have the nice food with you guys.
Yeah.
But that's how...
It's like Cousin Greg on Succession.
All right, so...
I'm so over them now.
A lot to plow our way through this morning. First of all, Pums, how was your holiday? Did you have a holiday?
I stayed home. It was a staycation, like a lot of people. And it was surprisingly irritating here in Joburg because so many people stayed.
Really?
So, dude.
So the freedom
so
of like
people.
Less traffic and less congestion.
So there was less traffic and less congestion because you're not all going to the same place at the same time. Right. But still, you know, you're still bumping into people.
So let me get this right. You stayed at home hoping everyone else would go away.
Yeah.
And you're pissed off with them that they also stayed at home, hoping everyone else would go away. I love it.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. It's like, but it was really cool. It was really, really cool. And the reason I wasn't here on Tuesday, Sia knows this, is because I went to go drop Kanego off at the bus to go to camp, to go to Sugar Bay for the week. So because we didn't go away, I sent him away. See, I couldn't afford for us both to go away. So I sent him away. This camp.
Or was that the line you're using so that you get your own time? Like, bye-bye now. See you in 7 days.
Except that this is the horrendous thing that happened to me is I thought I'd be like great at that, right? It's going away and it's like camp, like you see on TV, you know, you put them on the bus, they're off to the beach and you don't see them for 7 days. And then at 3 a.m. on the Monday night, they left on Tuesday. On Tuesday morning at 3, I was up looking at my emails, checking if I've gone through everything that was on the camp.
Oh, wow.
Shameful.
So I had a little bit of anxiety about letting him.
Oh, wow.
Because this isn't like a school camp.
No.
This, you know, a school camp, you know everybody that's going. Yeah, you know the people that are going. This is strangers all.
So what would you, just as a mother, what are your concerns? Like in case he meets a bully, like what are you worried about? What's going to happen to kids?
He's so far away. What if he doesn't like it? And now he can't come home. Wow. And they have no devices, so he can't even phone me to complain about it.
Wow. So is this what parents worry about? This is an interesting insight. This is why I say, parents, if you're going to send your kids to boarding school, one thing you must never, ever do, don't pick up the phone.
Oh,
exactly what you're saying. When you send your kids to boarding school, because you always hear people in South Africa.
That's hard, man.
Let me tell you something, Gareth. The biggest mistake is the guys whose parents pick up the phone. They are in for a torrid time.
So my sister's daughter's going to boarding school, and I'm actually having a little bit of, and she's going to boarding school here at NSA. I can just drive there at any time.
Yeah.
And I'm still freaking out.
Yeah, so don't, empty nest syndrome, they call it.
Yeah, but it's also, like, there are things that parents, you might not be concerned about, But it's difficult because this is the person who you think about all the time and who's dependent on you in so many ways. I mean, it's scary. I think there are parents who drop their kids off at school, even though they've been going to school for years, and they look at their kid and they're like, you're so little. I can't just leave you with these other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're genuinely like
a hard thing, man.
It was a hard, hard thing.
Oh, shame.
It really was.
Anyway, but Kanejo's having fun.
Yeah, so they sent like a link to a closed Facebook group, so they're posting pictures.
Oh, nice.
From camp. So
proof of life.
Yesterday, proof of life pictures. Kind of thing, you know. So yesterday they were like learning how to surf.
I do think like there's something great to be said for parents like you who do let their kids do these things and break out a little bit and do their own thing and learn and be around strangers, because that builds character like very few things. You know, I didn't like, when I was a kid, I did not like being away from my family and friends. If I had a crowd of strangers around me, I wasn't always an extrovert. It made me very apprehensive, very nervous, very anxious. But in those days, there weren't psychologists in the schools. There wasn't medicine for this stuff. If you didn't get through it, you would you'd fall in a heap, and then you'd have to get through it later.
Mm.
That was it. And I think it's great that there are still things like this that parents can send their kids to, because there are a lot of helicopter parents these days who never let go. And then those kids end up becoming, you know, completely incapable of dealing with any hardship, any anxiety, any difficulty, any difference in their composition of the people around them. Sure, it's not good.
So yeah, a week will fly by and he'll be fun and he'll
yeah,
have
look,
fun.
It's already Thursday.
There we go. And then when is he opening school?
Right. On Tuesday.
Oh, see, he's back, then he's off to school. You'll be fine. This is me trying to be reassuring. Meanwhile, I don't know. You know, I actually have to say, Sipuma, I have so much newfound sympathy after spending my festive break at home. And I really like spent a huge chunk of my time with family. And this time around, you know, it's my one sister with two kids, my other sister with a child. And we were all trying to find family activities. And we ended up being that exact case of a family that I often complain about. Like, oh, why is a whole family going to the mall? Because now I realize, it's like, oh, shucks.
You need something to do.
You have to entertain these kids. It's like, where do you go?
You need activities that will keep everybody from 5 to 50.
Yes.
Equally entertained.
And it's hard
crazy
to find those things.
You really are. Like, just, you're in a corner and it's like whatever can entertain them for at least an hour. It's like, yeah, sign up and that's it. If right now there was a point, my niece, who's a little over a year old, I don't know why, but was glued to the screen with one of these infomercial channels. I was like, yep, let her be, let her be. If that'll get her quiet, that's it. But we were that exact family who stood in line at a mall to take photos with a Santa. We drove to the botanical gardens one of the evenings to walk through for them to see the lights in the park. But I realized parents are a little stuffed when it comes to entertaining their kids. Shucks, that's tough.
All right, I want to pick up on two things that we started talking about yesterday, which need some further discussion. First of all, Venant sent me an email. He's in Mozambique, and he said, quick one on the Australian fires. It seems like it's not 200 arrests for arson. There was an arrest. There were arrests, and there were fines. But it's not 200 people. Just thought I'd let you know, as I know you wouldn't want to be wrong about this.
Okay.
Anyway, have a lucky year, and thanks for the great show that keeps me sane and on the straight and narrow. Peace and love. Venant in Mozambique.
Did he provide a number?
Yeah, he sent me the link, and he said, also, Epstein didn't kill himself.
All right, sure.
And then I read the article, which is from Snopes. They've corrected it, and Snopes gets their own criticism, but here we go. This is according to the latest news. Apparently, 183 people, according to the report by the New South Wales Police, was 183 people, including 40 juveniles, had been charged. Of those 183, 24 have been charged with deliberately setting fires. That's still a lot of people, you know. in a country
deliberately
that
deliberately setting fires.
That's right. This is what's so even though the number may be wrong, the fact that there are people with that intention, even two people with that intention, and here are 24 that have been charged deliberately setting fires. It's amazing. According to police, 53 other people have had legal actions for allegedly failing to comply with a total fire ban. Mm. And an additional 47 people have had legal actions for allegedly discarding a lighted cigarette or match on land. But that's arson too. Mm. You know, if you are allegedly discarding a lighted cigarette or match, that's also starting a fire. It may not be deliberate that you went out there with the intention of burning the place down, but it is arson.
Guys.
Yeah, that's hectic.
I mean, imagine if you just lit a cigarette in a petrol station while they're filling up the tanks. It blows up and someone says, oh, well, you were just by mistake lighting your cigarette. No.
Humans are irritating. Can you just have a moment? It's a human.
So I think it's a correction, but it isn't really, because if you break it down, there's just three different categories of people rather than 183 who's deliberately set the fires. And you know, people round up or round down. Believe me, 183 or 200 in my head, it's still too many people starting fires.
So Gareth, I want to act surprised, but I have to paint everyone with one brush here. So when I was young in primary school, my biggest goal was to be the naughtiest guy in school, right? Uh-huh. Anyway, let's not get into that.
Is this going
to
be an admission?
No. Give me a chance. But I could never be as naughty as these two kids. And I hate to say they were two white guys, but I've never met more naughty people than young white male kids. These guys set the thatch on fire. I will never forget these two guys' names. They did not even feel ashamed. They were screaming in the headmistress's face when she was disciplining.
You need to tell us their names, because they're two boys, so their names have remained the same.
See now.
And we want to say them as well.
We want to avoid these two.
We need their names, name and shame, right now.
I've never seen two people so free.
Just tell us their names. What if we know them?
What if they're employed?
I'm not getting sued.
What if I know them?
I'll never forget their two names, but Gareth, these two white boys set the thatch on fire in school and they felt so free.
What if they're still delinquents and you're not telling us, therefore we are unable to like curb their...
What if they're just 13-year-old boys who do stupid things?
This is a good reason to be a racist and be very... just avoid white boys. How old are you now?
I'm 33 now.
Just avoid any white guys at the age of 33?
Yeah.
Where did you go to school?
Bryandale Primary School, in Bryanston.
White guys that are 33...
And they live in Joburg.
Went to Bright. This is why we need their names.
No, I don't understand why.
It's a small subset. All right. The other thing, while we're talking about school and where people went to school, is Angie Mocheja released the results. But what I didn't play you was the clip of where she, I think she might have, it might not have been her. I think it might have been Gedlehlekisa in a wig, because listen to her ability to read numbers is as bad as his, all right? Do you want to hear this?
How mistress Angie.
Okay, just listen to this.
And between 2009 and 2019, as a sector, we produced more than 1,763,000,000. Yeah, you got it right. You can count. It's 1,763,000 per mistress.
Yeah, mistress Angie, guys.
Give
me stress, Angie.
Do me a favor. Like, come on. We've already got a problem that we have statistically the least literate, least numerate people in Africa in our country. In Africa. Okay? There are countries that don't even have a government in Africa. Like Somalia. They have more literate and more numerate people than we do. Across the average. And now we've got the Minister of Basic, and they've called it basic education, which is the best name for that department, because really it's not enough to get you through life. And she can't read these numbers. So, write it out. Can someone, just so that we can save ourselves the embarrassment, and I know that it's good to see these things because it shows you that she doesn't really care. She would have had that number in her head if she was a concerned person instead of a politician who's holding on to a job, and she has held on to that job for a long ass time. Despite delivering very mediocre results, I've got to say.
Maybe she's in the right place, Gareth. She sounds pretty basic.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. She's, Minister of Basic Education. So there we go. I know that there are people who are going to say, but it's unfair, but it's language. You're the fucking minister, you can get a one number right. You can get that number right. Write it out for her. If you're
if you're a
communications person, write it out for her. It's unacceptable that we have to. We must be the laughing. You know, people still passing around those Zuma clips of him not being able to do a number.
Also, there's no shame if it is a number thing. Say it in your own language.
Sure.
We have official languages.
Sure.
There is no shame in saying it in Zulu, in Xhosa. If you're more comfortable saying it in Pedi, what's the problem?
But this just proves to people who already think that we have a useless government that they are useless because they can't even get a number right. That's what it does. It reinforces bad people's ideas about our government without giving them a chance even to prove themselves. And I'm afraid, you know, the results, again, clearly they're not good with numbers because the results for this government in terms of numbers everywhere are disastrous. Who had some load shedding last night, by the way?
Yeah, I did. But I was surprised by when it came back.
It seems you're in my schedule the same.
Clearly.
Yeah,
yeah, it was off from 9 p.m. yesterday.
Yeah.
And I've had clearly mistakenly left a light switch on. But by the time I woke up at 4-ish, it was on. And was only scheduled to come back at 8 a.m. this morning. So clearly they came back a little earlier than expected.
Someone said that they have that Eskom Supush app. You have it. And it wasn't you who told me this, though. Apparently, there are already, like, they're dropping hints that there may be, like, level, what's the extreme, level 8 or whatever.
Oh, no.
Like, that's where zero power for, like, forget about it.
Oh, no.
That's coming on. You know what? I really like the idea of being independent, but, man, it's expensive. I looked into this idea of going off the grid because I think we've got to be independent. You just cannot rely. This government, it's a clown car full of people who just will never be able to have a capable state running under them. They can't. They can't do it. They cannot. Cyril is just not capable of leading this clown car, and the people who work for him are as bad as he is. So I want to be independent. Not because I hate the country or I hate the government or I don't. It's just I want to be responsible. So
and you don't want to
my
be
power goes off, it must be my fault and I must be able to fix it. And I don't want a generator pumping diesel fumes into my house. I looked at solar. It's going to cost me like $100,000-$120,000 to do that. I don't have that lying around. Do you?
I think you have to, if you...
Just got to bite the bullet.
Do something like that. Just
holiday.
Swallow it and go, okay.
Or marry rich.
You didn't go on holiday.
I didn't go on holiday. $100,000 full power.
But can you imagine, Pums? Now I have to put that in. But I think I got to do it.
What, marry rich?
No, I think I've got to I've got to borrow money from somewhere because this is in the long term going to save me money.
Mm.
You know Eskom is going to push up their rates soon.
It's true.
They always do it and it's going to get more expensive for less of their energy. I mean, I read the most fascinating thing. Someone sent to me yesterday on LinkedIn, Eleanor, who listens to the show. She was here with us.
Yes.
Eleanor, who came in to visit us the other day. She sent me this really interesting article. You talk about first world problems. Apparently data, you know, the stuff we use on our phones, this is hugely energy intensive because they run those big server farms which need to be cooled. And to provide electricity to cool these huge computer server farms is expensive as hell. They estimate, in fact, according to this article, which is it's on CBS.ca, which is the Canadian broadcaster, apparently They estimate the energy economy for data is enormous. They say it'll cost some... Oh, man, it's just huge. Let me just read this for you. I don't want to make it up. Computing will gobble up 11% of global energy by 2030, and cloud-based services will represent a sizable proportion of that. It's just huge. Higher speed 5G cellular networks, more widespread artificial intelligence, and the nascent Internet of Things, such as home devices, smart home devices, are guaranteed to send data demands through the roof. Autonomous vehicles, for instance, require a constant flow of information to stay on the road. And they say it's going to be huge, the amount of data that's going to need to be generated, kept, stored, passed around, made available at any time. As a result, we'll need more energy efficiency. And I'm afraid the bad news for everybody who's into sustainable energy, and so am I, is that the only source of power that can provide enough for all of us is nuclear. And we need to look at nuclear. So maybe in that respect, even though he was doing it because he had deals with the Russians, in that respect, maybe, I hate to admit it, but Gedleklegi Zazuma was ahead of his time because pursuing the nuclear option looked like an outrageous expense, but it probably would have been the only thing that will be able to power an economy in the future to the degree that you'll be able to afford the huge energy demands of something like data. I mean, isn't that interesting? It's because you can't get away from this.
Mm.
So nuclear provides huge amounts of energy in return by comparison with every other kind. I mean, petrol, coal, diesel, wind, solar, water. It's all nothing compared to nuclear. And nuclear has a very good record. People go, oh, Fukushima, and they talk about Chernobyl. And the fact that you can actually name the only Three Mile Island, the only couple of incidents that have happened. Of course, it's terrifying. If it does go wrong nuclear, it's very bad.
Oh, yeah.
But nobody died from Fukushima. They had plans, even though that was a natural disaster. It wasn't nuclear that went wrong. It was actually, you know, as a result of an earthquake and then a tsunami, which affected this power station on the coast. And now they've built in redundancies at power stations all over the world to make sure that that doesn't happen there again. They're very careful with nuclear. Smart people run nuclear plants, not the mamparas we've got running, the ones here in Kusile and Medupi.
So the most fascinating thing about that article for me is the possibilities that exist for new entrants into any kind of career.
Mm-hmm.
So when you are a young person today, making a decision about what you want to study, or where you want to go, or a business person thinking about new and different solutions. What that article says is that in the next 10 years, the landscape of what people are going to be asking for is going to be so different from what people are asking for today.
Isn't that exciting?
Mm-hmm.
That's
exciting.
Me,
and that's why so many of the things that we're arguing about now are just pointless. Like SAA and whether it should still be in business, like unions across the board who are just providing, you know, there's enormous potential, but we're looking in the wrong areas.
Well, Gareth, it speaks to what you were just saying now. I think I told you before, I had the opportunity to go and work at the Large Hadron Collider a couple of years ago as a data capturer.
You've really been around.
I've tried. And, you know, in science, the greatest thing about science is very often the public are prisoners of the moment. So we think of problems now as they are now. And oh my gosh, in 20 years, we'll have to use what we know now to solve those problems. But actually, if you think of something as simple as, remember when the CD came out and people thought, this is the final level.
Right.
I haven't seen a CD in 15 years.
Right.
And you know, you look at what an iPod can hold
but
now.
But do you remember I got into this argument with Damon on Tuesday? Because he said, oh, you're a climate change denier. And I said to him, no, but the solution to this problem is going to be discovered. People are going to find ways to pull. There already are businesses. I know a guy who's found a way to pull carbon dioxide out of the air and turn it into energy. Now, that will substantially change the argument. So all these people who are prophets of doom and they're looking at the problems now and they're saying, oh, we've been killing the planet and blah. It's all hysteria. There's going to be a technical solution because if our survival depends on it, you better believe we'll find it. And things are developing so quickly. Like the growth curve here is exponential. We're finding solutions to problems we didn't even know we had.
And that's what I try to get to it with Damon. You know, problems.
Good luck on that.
Is solutions. We don't know that we need the solution. So, for instance, I'll use a quick one. Penicillin. You know, when Alexander Fleming observed what he did was the story goes. There's a few other stories, but he essentially observed some mold, and through that observation, and I don't want to bore you with the science, but he gave us penicillin.
Yeah, which, of course, we didn't know we needed penicillin.
Yeah, so. Don't be a prophet of doom.
By the way, we still use that method.
People are very self-serving. We always find solutions when we have to.
Right. So let's be optimistic about the future, not pessimistic. But I do think being independent in any way you can is really a good idea.
Yeah.
We have ministers that can't even say 1.6 million.
Please.
In the meantime, my flatmate and I have now dubbed dubbed this generator the Great Gatsby generator. So there's this neighboring complex that we have, and our unit is almost close to the fence, so we can see into the neighboring complex, and they have a generator.
And it's loud.
Now, remember in the Great Gatsby?
The whole complex.
Powered. So basically, I feel like the neighboring complex just looks at us like,
how much do they pay for their levies?
I wonder.
Sure.
So remember the Great Gatsby? Gatsby used to always look across, was it like the lake or something, and see that green light, and that represents, you know, his hopes and desires in life. We sometimes just stand on our balcony. Stand on our balcony, we hear the hum of the generator, like, okay.
Yeah.
The Great Gatsby generator.
That's where we, one day, you know, that's where you're like, somewhere over the rainbow.
One day we'll be powered like this with the knowledge.
All right, we got five things you need to know. So in a bid to improve Gauteng's education system, Premier David Makura has announced his government will be releasing the performance of primary schools in the coming week. For the first time, parents will get a picture of which primary schools are the best in the province. Ooh, this is going to cause trouble, but it's good. Parents want to know which which produce the results, which don't. They want to send your kid to some school where they say, oh, well, everybody here gets a pass regardless.
Unpopular opinion.
Mm?
Parents need to do more.
Oh, sure. But Pumi, no one's going to argue with you, even though it's an unpopular opinion. Because parents hate being told that they're wrong, right?
Parents need to do more. Parents need to support their kids more. Parents need to support their schools more. Parents need to support their... The whole thing, actually, rests on a partnership between teachers and parents. It's not an us and them.
Yep.
More parents need to participate more. So just sending your child to the best primary school because somebody said it's the best primary school, and then you sit back and hope that the best primary school is going to do everything that needs to be done. I got news for you. That primary school is going down.
Yeah. Amen.
There we go. And no one's disagreeing with you, despite your prefacing this with an unpopular opinion.
It remains unpopular.
Good. Yeah, it is, but it's right.
It's good.
So apparently, Makura said the government will take a different approach, investing not only in high school education, but also in early childhood development, which really is smart because that's where it starts. If you get it wrong at that age, it's a disaster from there on. Makura was speaking in Randburg on Wednesday where the province's top students, schools and districts were announced. Gauteng received the second highest matric pass rate in the country, 87.2%. So who was first, the Western Cape? It wouldn't have been Northern Cape. No one there goes to school, right?
There's like five people in
I think it might have been the Free State, if I'm not mistaken.
Free State first. Aibo, please.
Wait a minute.
No.
I know Limpopo was last.
No, not Free State. Come on.
Free State.
No chance.
If the Free State's the top, I'll tell you what.
Free State.
Aibo.
Yes.
No way.
Impossible. They must have lied. They've cooked their results.
How, Gareth?
No, we'll come back to that.
How, Gareth?
Never. Free State.
Not a chance.
Yeah, Free State ranked number one in 2019 with an 88.4% pass rate. And then Gauteng only received an 87.2% pass rate.
Impossible.
Give the Free State its flowers.
No, it's impossible. Oh.
Third was Northwest. Followed by the Western Cape. It was KZN next, then Mpumalanga, then the Northern Cape, and then the Eastern Cape, then Limpopo ranked in 9th.
Shame Limpopo.
Yeah, Limpopo with 73.2%.
Oh, guys, Eastern Cape.
Disasters both. All right, well, I'm just glad I don't live in those provinces and I don't have kids at school there. Sorry for you if you do. That's about as sympathetic as I'm going to get in that front this morning. All right, let's see what else is in the news. Times Live reporting this morning that there is a 1 million rand reward offered after a cash van bombing in Gauteng. Did you hear about this?
I'm considering investigating for 1 million rand.
Cash and transit company SBV Services are offering a reward of up to 1 million rand for information leading to the arrest and prosecution of a gang that bombed an armored vehicle on the N4 West Highway towards Pretoria on Tuesday. The van was rammed off the road by a sedan. Four occupants were forced out by men with rifles, and then the van was bombed, said police spokesperson Colonel Brenda Muridlili. The robbers first escaped in three vehicles with an undisclosed sum of cash. The vehicle used to ram the van was abandoned, burning at the scene. SBV Services Group CEO Mark Barrett said, "As a responsible corporate citizen, we investigate all incidents. We do not tolerate violence, crime, and threats to our human lives." Because you imagine, like, being one of those guards, one of those guys who drives those vans around and I mean, I've seen them walk around with those guns, but they're nervous. They're nervous all the time.
All these private armies are nervous. All of them. Like those guys, your CSS or whatever, your technical, all those guys are, poorly trained and armed and completely freaked out.
How can we still be running a cash economy?
Thank you.
Why are people not using the means that are the safest? I don't carry cash on me anymore. I used to. I used to always have cash on me. For the last 4 years, if I don't go and draw from an ATM, which is rare, it's if I have to pay someone in cash or if there's something I, need to get that only, like parking or whatever, I don't use cash otherwise. Why are we still in this country such a cash economy? It's bad for us. It's unsafe. Yeah. It's dangerous. And it's unnecessary. There are better alternatives.
Have you been to Kenya?
Because it remains tangible.
Yeah, but that's still not good. So what? So you don't feel the money. It's ridiculous. Like, use electronic banking means. There are apps on your phone. You don't even need to use a bank. The apps on your phone where you can pass money to each other.
But Gareth, it's happening now already in countries we consider. Have you been to Kenya? I don't know if you've had
I mean, M-Pesa.
Sort of mobile money already exists in countries we look down upon.
Yes.
It's ridiculous in Kenya to carry money. I know my friends in Kenya, they consider cash
because
ridiculous.
If we didn't have cash, if we
Why
weren't
are
dealing
you looking
with
looking down upon Kenya?
No, you know, South Africans think we are the USA of Africa. We got this thing, even though we're not, but. Whatever, that's another story.
These things would all stop. All of this cash in transit shit would stop if we weren't dealing in cash. So there's a solution. Just humbly, offering that up as a potential way to sort this problem out. Another story from Times Live. This is quite interesting. Cities about to begin enforcement operations against Green Market Square refugees. Of course, that's the city of Cape Town. Now, this is exactly what Herman Mashaba did to the vendors here in Joburg. So I'm already prejudiced against this, but let's take a look. It's from the city of Cape Town. They say they will begin enforcement operations against a group of refugees who are camping outside the Central Methodist Church in Green Market Square. These are not vendors. They're just refugees. According to J.P. Smith, mayoral committee member for safety and security, it comes after two meetings this week with representatives from the refugees, SAPS, Home Affairs, and the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. They've been protesting for months, previously outside the UNHCR offices on St. George's Mall, before they were forcefully removed in a chaotic scene on the 30th of October. What do you think, Pums?
I'm on the record here saying this is a terrible, terrible act. It's and something has to come, to give, but it's a terrible indictment on the city, on the UN, on all of these people in this
circle. But what should we do with these people? What must be done? Because they can't occupy public space, which they are not entitled to occupy. It is unsafe. It is hazardous. It is unhygienic. It is dangerous. Places like Los Angeles are now passing laws that are allowing homeless people to stay on the street. And all it's doing is making the homeless crisis worse, not better. Even if you give some of these homeless people places to stay, they end up on the street because a lot of them have problems. Now, these are refugees, so it's a different thing to homelessness. But it's not the people of Cape Town's problem or fault that these people who come from wherever they come from, other places where they've left as refugees, it's not the people of Cape Town's problem, and they're not paying City of Cape Town taxes like you pay in Joburg and I pay in Pretoria. They're not doing that because they want other people to be able to live on the sidewalk. And this is right next to St. George's Cathedral, right next to Parliament. I hope if they're going to get rid of them after the State of the Nation address. So that the politicians have to walk past them and smell the smell.
Green Market Square is far from them.
No, this is up near St. George's Cathedral. You can actually see the cathedral in the background. It's on Green Market Square, not St. George's.
The worst thing we can do in any situation is do nothing. And I fear that's because we live in such a PC time now, you can't upset anybody, is that you do nothing and then you have chaos.
Well, you can't just live wherever you want. I can't go and live. I went to a dinner last night at the most magnificent house here in Johannesburg. Beautiful garden, like a garden. There's a lawn like the size of a cricket pitch. Just beautiful. Absolutely magnificent. Now, ideally, I would like to pitch a tent in the middle of that lawn and live there for a few nights. It might be fun. But if I do that, I will be forcibly removed, which is exactly what should happen if you go to a place that is not yours and you settle. You can't just settle somewhere just because it's useful, convenient, and that's all you've got. Sorry.
So I do believe that there's a political solution to what's happening over there. And what we're not seeing is we're not seeing enough people, enough of the political leaders engaging about what needs to happen.
And you know why, right? Because it's not a sexy story.
There's a political solution.
What do you think it would be?
I think that there's a conversation that needs to be had with the leaders. So you've seen the pictures. There's this little guy. Anyway, before I get distracted by the little guy. Yeah, one of the leaders of the refugee.
What is he, a dwarf?
He's a dwarf.
Oh, brilliant. I'm suddenly interested in the story like never before. Tell me more.
And when we saw the first images of the police like ripping people off the streets, I was like, what are they doing to this child? And then it turns out that it wasn't a child. And Gareth, if you look for the images, it was so horrendous on so many levels. But he is hectic, shouting. I think it's Congolese. The guy that's the leader, I think is Congolese. Shouting. And the thing about it is between the UN and the city, and the leaders of the refugee movement, there has to be some way of having a conversation. And part of and how this thing escalated was it escalated around when the xenophobic attacks escalated here in South Africa. And that gave an opportunity for the refugees to say, we feel unsafe here. And therefore the UN being the government of governments.
Wow, he's a dwarf. That's amazing.
He is hectic, this guy.
And he's angry, is he?
Whoa.
I like an angry dwarf.
I initially saw the video, I was like, what are these police? This is the worst thing that the police can do.
The best thing you can do with a dwarf
ripping kids
is,
off
to,
the street.
Is to hold their head, because they don't have the reach with their arms or their legs to kick or to hit you. If you just hold their head, they can only move forward at a slow pace and they can't get close enough to have the reach.
But can they fight with him with dignity? Why do they have to lift him like a child?
I thought it was a child.
Yeah, can they give him the dignity of maybe, ducking his punches?
Can I just suggest that the refugees find a leader who's a little bigger and stronger?
His name is
the heart of a lion.
Lesulu Papi Sukami, and he's 44 years old. And yes, you were right. He is from the
he's
Congo.
From the Congo. Yeah, yeah, he's Congolese.
Get him in here.
He was arrested on Friday.
Oh shit!
He had to appear in court this past Monday on robbery charges. Yeah, according to the charge sheet, he allegedly assaulted some people in CBD October 2019.
This is the problem. Like, now we've got, and it's peak season in Cape Town. We've got everybody there. People from the rest of the country, people from the rest of the world. And they want to go and see places around Parliament, St. George's Cathedral. It's the center of Cape Town. It's one of the oldest places in urban South Africa. There's lots to see there. I've been there. It's a nice place to go walk around. But you can't walk around there if you're going to be robbed by a bunch of refugees. And don't give me that whole, but just because they're refugees doesn't mean they're thieves, because this guy's up on robbery charges.
But it's fine. He won't be in jail too long. It'll be a short sentence.
Come now.
You just can't help yourself, can you?
No, short jokes are the best. Okay, quickly. A judge in Brazil has ruled that a film depicting Jesus as gay must be removed from the TV stream.
Oh, my God.
Netflix.
I better watch it soon.
No, it won't be removed here. But you see, if you want to watch it, watch it. If you don't, don't. I understand that there would be Christians who'd be upset about this. I understand that there are people who think that this is a big political statement and it's a victory. Go ahead. Do whatever you want. I'm not interested in it at all. Mostly, I'm not interested in Jesus, and I don't care. And
but
if you
are
care,
you interested in Anthony Hopkins as the Pope?
Yeah, that
maybe is that
what's it called?
Pope?
Two Popes?
Yeah, the two Popes.
It's been receiving a lot of attention. It's on Netflix.
It is actually.
Does he play Benedict?
No, so he plays Ratzinger.
Benedict.
Yeah.
And as opposed to Francis. Okay, I'll watch. All right, that sounds good.
Great dialogue.
Okay.
Intense.
You've won me over. Finally, in the news, the army has warned of fake texts informing the U.S. citizens they've been selected for draft. Again, when you have a media machine in America that only sees two options with this Iranian situation, they see either full-on war, where they're going to draft everybody, including the women, into fighting, which would be ridiculous. That's the one thing that, and this is the media in America, they've been saying this for the last 4 days, despite everybody, including President Donald Trump, saying, we're ratcheting this down. He said it clearly yesterday in his speech after the Iranians feebly bombed two sites and killed nobody. And they warned the Americans they were going to bomb those places beforehand, because this is all a big show for Iran. They can't be seen to be weak by their own people. They have to do something because Soleimani was taken out. So the American media want war, clearly. That would be great for ratings. They also really despise Donald.
War is always great for ratings.
And they despise Donald Trump.
And the economy and, of America.
Exactly. And for all kinds of reasons, the media are well on their way to either declaring outright war and saying, oh my God, everyone's going to draft, or to say that that Iran must be appeased in every possible way. Chamberlain style, walk out there and go, I have peace in our time, and do what Obama did and pay them off with billions of dollars in cash, which is exactly what they used to buy those missiles they fired at US military bases just yesterday. So those are the only two options the American media see. And then we wonder why people are responding to fake texts that are saying you're about to be drafted. It's nonsense and it's hysteria.
So the thing that fascinates me the most about all of the images that we've been seeing about, when airplanes go down, it's everything is like fire and burnt. And yet these missiles, they just break into five pieces that are conveniently like shot into.
Are you talking about the Iranian ones?
Across the board. Have you seen
a video of them actually taking out Soleimani?
What we've seen, all these videos, all of the, the sound, it's all such a big production. It's all such a big production. I'm just like, irritating, because it is actually a huge machine to get everybody riled up, to get the economy and the ratings.
Taking out this General Soleimani has been the most surgical, expert intervention I think anybody can recall. Even when they took out Osama bin Laden, there were casualties, remember? Because the one helicopter crashed. This was beautifully executed. It was elegant in every way. They took out only the two people they were looking to take out. The leader of the militia, the Shia militia that is running parts of Baghdad for Iraq, and who were the people who stormed the embassy that started all of this, and Soleimani, who is like the vice president and the head of the CIA and the head of the FBI in Iran, and was certainly regarded as some kind of a mastermind by them. And he caused epic amounts of shit in Syria, in Lebanon, in Yemen, in Iraq. So there's plenty of evidence to show that this guy, if there was an opportunity to take him out, it would have been absolutely incumbent on the US to do so. And they did it beautifully. It was clean. No other people hurt. Drone, no people necessarily put in the area of risk and danger that they might have been in a conventional war. Done. Surgically removed the cancer. That's what they did. And I think Trump's speech yesterday, which everybody was expecting him to come out and go, right, you bomb our military base, we're going to go and escalate this even more. He didn't. He was calm. He read from the teleprompter. He said, Iran is backing down, which is exactly what they are doing. Those military strikes were ridiculous. And they did warn the U.S. Said, we're going to bomb here and here, because they want the U.S. to clear their men away. They know if they hurt one more person in the U.S. Army and the U.S. military, that they will be taken down. And the first person's head on a platter will be that Ayatollah Khamenei.
So I hear all of that, the clinical strike, all of that. Why is it incumbent upon the U.S. world police to be the ones?
Because they've actually lost 600 of their own military personnel because directly of this man's intervention in various theaters of war.
You see, the thing for me about the U.S.
Isn't that 600 people are dead and it's not worth taking out one guy?
No.
I would. Any good president should.
Dude. The thing for me about America and wars, and particularly taking out individuals, is that it doesn't bode well for the country at the end of the day. It's great for America. It's great for their It's great for their economy. It's great for their media.
Why should America give a shit about Iran's economy?
Dude, but actually, if you're going to be there and be world police...
They're not the world police.
But that's what they've assigned themselves to be.
They are currently in Iraq under invitation from the Iraqi government. And they're there to keep the peace. There's a hugely complex situation going on in Iraq at the moment with Shias, Sunnis, Kurds, all kinds of international interests. And America's kind of...
taken aside.
But America's been asked. America's been asked to try and keep things under control. Remember, there isn't a government right now in Iraq. There's a prime minister who's an acting prime minister. He doesn't even have a cabinet. Mm. Now, Iran have aspirations to increase territory in that area, if not influence. And of course, America have an aspiration to include influence, but everybody goes, it's about oil. It isn't about oil. America are now energy independent of the Middle East. They've got more oil than they need. They've been fracking. They've been checking in Alaska. They've got huge amounts of oil now. America doesn't need the Middle East. Frankly, they could walk out of there, as Pumi might like, and as Iran has certainly said they'd like, and they can leave it to become a clusterfuck of its own kind. And it will be. Trust me. Because the first thing that will happen is Iran will step in Iraq, and then there will be a huge power imbalance, and some people will lose that. Then the Saudis will step in. Then we're going to have... Do you want to know what World War III looks like? That's what it starts like. So at the moment, this very fragile thing... And by the way, the only reason Iran is even in a position at the moment to be the powerful influence that it is because the last two administrations, George W. Bush and Barack Obama, fobbed them off. They kicked the can down the road. These guys are trying to develop a nuclear weapon. If you watched any of this footage from Iran over the funeral of Soleimani, these are not sane, sensible people who should have their finger on any button, especially not a nuclear one. And if George W. Bush had done his job and if Barack Obama had done his, then we wouldn't have to have this situation, which is minor. It's already gone away. Not a big deal. And yes, I would rather have America world police than Iran world police. Or even Iran Middle East police.
People should be allowed to govern or misgovern themselves.
Yeah, and destabilize everyone around them.
Govern or misgovern themselves. Mm,
yeah, because when they misgovern in Zimbabwe, then guess who carries the can here? We do. Okay. Ask all the Zimbabweans who are living in South Africa.
Interesting one. So if you are interested in when this sort of... era started in Iran, you want to look up a guy called Henry Kissinger, and along with Assad, it started to all descend from there. Yes. But people can go and look that up themselves.
All right, well, that's all we got time for in this hour, but we've got the Burning Platform coming up next, which is exciting. Our first one of the new year. Pumi and Canthan, returning champions for the Burning Platform. We've got a lot to catch up on. Canthan had a busy December. When we spoke to you last, you couldn't talk about much. I wonder if you can now. What's going on? How are you, Canthan?
Sia has turned my mic in the opposite direction.
Yeah, on purpose.
Wow.
Sia has turned the microphone completely
off. Well, let's see what goes down in the next hour.
Okay, let's see what happens in the next hour. It's all very exciting. Stick around for that and a whole lot more. CliffCentral.com. It is Thursday. It is the 9th of January, and we'd like to hear from you. You know what to do. You can call us or message us or send us a text on 0797482090. CliffCentral.com.